Let's come to the implementation of top-down parsers. Yeah. So, in our theoretical foundations for top-down parsing, we have heard about the item pushdown automaton and its general concept, how it's set up. And what we have observed when we had a look at how those automata are constructed, the item pushdown automaton is usually, as soon as you have variant productions there, so for one non-terminal, several right-hand sides, you have conflicts that turn the automaton into a non-deterministic automaton. That, however, is a inconvenient thing in order to implement that, because usually there is, well, if you have a look at concrete machines and how the architecture looks like, they usually support mainly deterministic acts. So usually you want to know in advance what you will do next and not just choose from any possibility that there is. So we usually like to have deterministic automata for implementation. Yeah. So what can you do now, since the construction principles that we have were non-deterministic or would yield a non-deterministic automaton? Well, there's certain techniques that you might be able to borrow from the field of Turing machines, where there's also an issue of non-deterministic Turing machines and whether algorithms for non-deterministic Turing machines are somehow doable in hardware, and there are certain concepts of getting rid of non-determinism. So, one idea that leads to the concept of so-called GLL, or generalized LL parsing, is a kind of a brute force way of handling all that. And it consists in the idea of whenever there is an actual non-deterministic choice in the original automaton, what you would do is, well, since you don't know which of these would be necessary in order to uncover this maybe just one singular decision choice that leads to accepting something, and all it needs is that there exists one run of the automaton with one particular choice of all the decisions, so that the automaton is considered to be accepting for a particular input. Well, in order to not miss any of these decision combinations, what you do whenever you reach a point where there's non-determinism, you simply copy the current configuration of the machine and pursue the computations of each of these multiply the configurations with as many choices that you have, perform the particular choice for each of these copies, and continue computing all of those. Well, let it be conceptually in parallel. It can also be, of course, one after the other. But essentially what you need to do is you need to compute all of these computations. And if one of them accepts, then you will consider this input as being accepted by the machine. With that, you kind of brute force your way through all the possible non-deterministic spots in the derivation, and with that cover everything there is. Of course, with the downside of multiplying the number of configurations that you have to take into account, not just running on one configuration all the time, but you collect several of them for each situation where you have non-deterministic choice, meaning for each variant production, whenever you get to the non-terminal of that, you will generate a whole set of follow-up configurations with all the different variant choices. And boy, they sum up quite quite massively. Still, there's some tricks involved in that. For a copy of this configuration, you don't need to do a deep copy, at least at first, but you can kind of shallow copy and point to like one common actual pushdown content and one common input in terms of just a pointer to the position just a position in the input, for example, and a stack. You can just keep the differences between the stacks separated from each other and have one common stack as like the one that's just for the thing that everyone has in common, and so on. So with that, you can already trim down the amount of memory that you need for that. But still, in terms of computational power, you will have to power through all those different choices that you can do. And well, that's quite intensive, so to say. This is like the general purpose construction that you have when you try to make a non-deterministic Turing machine deterministic, so to say. This is what you do when all fails, and this is what makes a non-deterministic Turing machine algorithm exponential for in when you try to bring it down to a deterministic Turing machine implementation. Yeah? Okay. Another idea that you can have is to do a plain depth-first descent into the derivation tree as recursive descent in that sense. And if you realize that at some point you mismatch the input, you just backtrack to the last non-deterministic decision that you did and go the other way. As soon as you realize that this again leads to a mismatch in the input, you undo that again and go whatever remains there is to do. If that doesn't help, you backtrack to the next best non-deterministic choice position and redo your choice there until you run out of non-determinism situations in your derivation tree. And if you're not able to match the input with any undone and redone non-determinism places, then you're usually not accepting this input for this machine. Of course, this is a little bit problematic as soon as you run into a grammar that tends to do recursive productions. So if you happen to expand and so on, if you always have to run into this choice, you might be trying to explore a path that will never really ever finish. So there's a little bit more to that than just blind recursive descent and backtracking, but in principle, this is one way of handling the situation. The third one is the recursive descent and look ahead. So for that, you will still try to depth first dive into creating a derivation tree. And at situations where you would run into a conflict, thus being non-deterministic, usually you will not just do a blind selection of one of the choices, but instead do a kind of a an educated choice, and the educated choice is possible through looking at the actual input, or at least the beginning of what remains in the input to be matched with. So you look up the next few input symbols and use them in order to decide whichever choice is better suited for reaching these input symbols. Yeah? And this is like the classical approach that has been done quite often by now, and this is the one that we're going to be seeing in the next few slides. So the concept for that would be called the LL1 parser, which is an extension of the item pushdown automaton. And what it has as components is what you see here. So there's the usual pushdown. There is the input with a pointer to what remains to of the input to be processed, and one window of limited look ahead. So there's a finitely sized window into the input that you can use for peeking into the top of the, or the front of the remaining input. Usually for the LL1 parser, we will limit the length of the input that we can peek into by size 1. So, everything else just remains pretty similar to the item pushdown automaton. The only component that might be of interest is this MQE, which is a table that contains the actual rule that needs to be chosen when in state Q with input W in the preview window, in the look ahead window. So, as we said, we want, with that we extend the plain item pushdown automaton to a little more advanced structure. We consider always the next input symbol to determine the appropriate next rule for expansion. And that already creates a construct that is able to parse a few grammars. Not all grammars that there are, but there are some that are possible to parse that way. And the class of grammars that is suited for that is this class of LL1 grammars. So for an L1 grammar, you can choose uniquely the appropriate rule for the next expansion in every possible part of the derivation. Yeah. So a more formal definition of that class is the reduced grammar LL1, or a grammar is called LL1 if for all alternative productions, thus productions that both apply to the same non-terminal with two different right-hand sides, alpha and alpha prime. If for all the derivations that are possible where this A is now occurring in the syntax form that we have derived so far in a particular context, meaning that when we start our derivation from S and reach such a non-terminal, then beta is like the right-hand side remainder of the sentence form, thus the context of A, then we can always disambiguate the yield that we get from alpha and beta, or alpha prime and beta, by just looking at the first terminal symbol of this yield. So this means that we can disambiguate by looking at the remaining input, whether when we come into a situation where we see UA beta as our current syntax form, and we need to decide whether to expand A with alpha or A with alpha prime, then what we can do is just look at the yield, or well, the remaining input, and look at the first terminal symbol that we find in the input, and then we can already say whether this belongs to variant alpha or variant alpha prime. Yeah? So this is a very convenient way of defining things, because it's just like we're defining this class with property that we wish for the class to be fulfilled. Yeah? So let's have a look at whether there are actual real grammars that are of desired class. So for that, we look at example one. Example one consists in this grammar. This grammar has essentially two productions. This E goes to ID, which is kind of uninteresting, since this doesn't have any variance involved, thus doesn't play a role in determinism or non-determinism of a parser that is able to parse that thing. So this is just, this is not a problem for LL parsing. Thing that we are rather interested is this one. This one has alternatives now. So there's either this right-hand side, that right-hand side, or even the third right-hand side. So there's three alternatives, and those alternatives can all be chosen whenever we have to expand an S that we find in the input. Yeah? So if we think back, we need to look at situations where this non-terminal S can be expanded. So this S can be expanded here, here, and here. And we have to determine whether each of the choices are differentiable by looking at the first input symbol that's going to be matched by each alternative of this S. So, and well, possibly the context of that, but we'll see, particularly when we focus on the S itself, that S starts either with the terminal if, the terminal while, or whatever E starts with, which is ID. So with that, this is just always like the first terminal that we will be able to see whenever we expand to alternative 1, 2, or 3. So this is the 1 for 1, this is the 1 for 2, this is the 1 for 3. And each of them is distinct from the other. So what would we say then? Would say that it suffices to look just at the first terminal symbol of the remaining input to decide whether alternative 1, 2, or 3 is applicable here. So if that is the case, then we can clearly say that this grammar is LL1. Yeah. Let's have another example. So this is almost the same example as before. Again, E is uninteresting. There is no alternative involved in that. S, however, has alternatives. It now has one alternative more than before. And that's good. Otherwise, it would have been the same example and would have been boring. So now we have a newcomer here, which is this one. And this one is already pretty close to this one over here. So we have both of the rules start with if, which is a bad thing, because both of them will, whenever they are expanded, will ultimately have as their first symbol the same terminal. Yeah. Even the second terminal is always the same. The third one, well, if the only thing that E can expand with here is ID, so even the third one will be the same, the bracket will be the same, and now we arrive at whatever S begins with, which is, again, back to beginning, if bracket ID bracket, back to the beginning, if bracket ID bracket, and so on. And this can go on forever. So for the whole thing, we now know that there is just no constant look ahead that we can establish in our LLK parser, so that we are able to differentiate between variant 1 and variant 2. Yeah? So for all finite k that we choose for a look-ahead window, we will always be able to construct an input example that still is from the semantics of the grammar, but is exceeding the finite look-ahead window of the parser implementation that we have chosen. So, well, what we can say is this thing is not even LL1, not even LL2, and not even LLK for any k greater than 0. Yeah? Okay. So that is our grammar class LL1.